Janet.
Yes, I agree with the two items Brian brought up. I support this motion. I do, though, think that when it comes to not only to resources, but in general, that we have to think creatively and... sorry. And act creatively. I mean, using the same idea of, you know, say, for example, resources should not be limited to paid staff. We have unpaid staff. There are people out in the community. There are people already doing work that, with material that could be used, all kinds of things. That kind of thing I think we need to think about.
Okay. Andrea, and then back to Virginia.
What I guess when the question of what is local comes up, I think of KPFA as being in relationship to a community, because KPFA is dependent on a community of volunteers. No way around it. That's how we get our money. And so on some level, we have a responsibility to be in relationship. That means to hear them. And that means to provide the service of information to them, to if we want to cultivate and continue their loyalty and their involvement in the station. So when I think of community, I think there is a geographic, you drop the stone in the pond and it ripples. And KPFA, the station that physically needs physical people to physically walk in that station and help, that's the epicenter of what I think is local coverage. And anyone's welcome to debate me, but, you know, somebody's got to get up early in the morning and come down to those fund drives, and somebody's got to, you know, provide the apprenticeship, the apprentices for that thing. So I think there is a very geographic reality. And I also think that this question came up many months ago when the Morning Mix was, you know, after the Morning Mix was taken off the air. And folks, good, bad, or otherwise, it provided some much needed local coverage of issues that this community that we are in relationship to needs its events publicized, needs its local issues discussed. And so with the absence of that, and we get that 8 to 9 program, which, you know, sometimes I find it very confusing. There were repeats this week of a program. I didn't know if it was if the rebroadcast was from last week or last month. It wasn't announced. It was very confusing, but it wasn't local. And I think there's when Brian says, "Well, how do we make it interesting to people not in our area?" I think there's also a drift. We have to be careful of only serving an online community or thinking of this like it, as a programmer. Is there a temptation? Is there a desire to create news that could be, or programs that could be national, that could be syndicated? You know, those kind of programs, like Sonali Kohakura's program from 8 to 9, yes, it could be broadcast anywhere, but it's not as relevant to people here. So how do we strike that balance? How do we cater to that need to be interesting to many different folks and also to be true to the people that serve the station physically and financially.
Great. So I have Virginia back on. Are there any more hands for discussion on this? Okay. Go ahead, Virginia.
Okay. This is just, it's so hard for me to talk about this. I tend to get personal, so don't scream at me. Just wave if it sounds that way. Brian, I admire your style so much a lot of the time. I mean, your talent, your ability to distill things, all those things, I think are you, and there are others. But I mean, I think it's obvious to a lot of people, maybe not all, I know not all, but that not everybody has those talents developed. So the Morning Mix, like people have said, they did have a sort of somewhat less coordinated emphasis on digging into their communities. And I obviously can't make this happen, But I wish so much that people with the talent that you and others have would see your role so much more, even if it's really, really hard, as training people that may not seem to be as talented initially. And I'm sure that it's, I'm not blaming you, I'm sure that there's a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff that, you know, where people don't necessarily, haven't taken the opportunity, et cetera. But somehow I just think that should be made to happen much more so that it isn't just a few really talented people and then some that don't have the training. I think it needs to be that people with that kind of talent that you that figure out a way to do the training.
Okay. So we'll have Margie and then back to Brian.
So I think I agree with Brian on the two questions, what is community and where are the resources? And I think this board has to have a conversation about what our responsibility is around resources. I've tried to have that conversation with the national board as well, because though that, you know, I don't know what the point is of being on these boards if we're not responsible for doing something about the resources available to the station. Our stations. It matters to me whether or not people listen to the programs. That matters to me a lot. And we have very imperfect ways of measuring that because we don't do whatever they're called, arbitrons. Apparently, there people have figured out there's some sort of relationship between the number of people who are listening online, which we can quantify. There's a relationship between that and how many people are actually listening in the total community. So one thing I would like to have when we have this discussion is and I would ask our chair isn't here, our vice chair, somebody, to ask the station to provide us with listener statistics for the various programs that are on the air so that we have a sense of what people are listening to, because I think that's important going forward. And that will give us a baseline. So let's say, you know, right now we'll get our listener statistics. We put a new program on the air. We do some listener statistics in the future, and we'll have some basis of comparison. I think that's really important for us carrying out our responsibility to make sure that the station is living up to its responsibilities under the bylaws, to reach people. I could spend all day talking about individual programs. I won't do that, but I think that our individual likes and dislikes are of course less important than whether or not people are listening to the programs that are on the air. That seems to me to be the bottom line.
Brian,
I just want to be careful that we don't beat ourselves up too hard here. The training programs KPFA does have, I think, are one of its incredible strengths. And I think a lot of us who are paid programmers at the station see training and mentoring people as part of our responsibilities. The apprenticeship program is amazing. The news training program, you know, Mark Maracle works an 8-hour shift producing an hour-long newscast and then stays around another 2.5 hours for half the year to train a cohort of 10 volunteers who are seeding the reports, the ranks of our reporting staff. It's where I learned how to do radio. It's where Mitch Jeserich learned how to do radio. Christopher Martinez did it. Laura Privis did it. Many, many other people in media. I raised grant money to run a 3-year advanced training program, so there's a second tier for people who've done that and did it. I had to stop when I moved to the mornings because I had to draw the line at 14-hour days. But and night classes are what work for volunteers. But, you know, we run a structured internship program. We have 1 to 2 at a time. Discovered that, you know, our limits are I can't supervise more than 2 interns at a time and give them an amount of training and mentorship that is fair to them while still putting a decent show on the air. But it's structured. There's detailed descriptions on the website of how to plug in. It's posted on the internship hunting pages of numbers of local colleges and universities. And, you know, let's not forget to celebrate the things we do pretty well here. I think having an open door and multiple avenues for people to plug in for training is one of them.
Thank you. Is there any more on this? Okay. Voting? No, we're not voting on this. Yes. Can I yield? I'll yield a minute. How about my?
Thank you. I guess I want to say that training to me goes two ways. And one thing I like about the apprenticeship program, as far as I know, is that they are kind of drawing out the innate intelligence that the people already come with. So I'm not, I probably didn't express it this way, but when I'm talking about training, I'm talking about community people training you guys too. I'm not just talking about it as being one way.
All right. Sorry, the list is closed.
Oh. No.
Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
No, I think we're on the same page. Our Gaza coverage during the invasion would not have been half as good on Upfront if we hadn't had Linda Khoury, who had been working in that area for years as an intern at the time with an incredible Rolodex of people working on Palestinian solidarity issues and smart academics working on them. And we definitely look, if you look at our internship description on Upfront, we're specifically seeking people who will broaden the breadth of our coverage by bringing experience and community context that we don't have. That is in the mission statement of our internship program. We're looking to learn from them and give them the tools that they can use to educate more people. So, you know, we don't, like, beat our own chests about everything we do that's good a lot, but don't assume that means we're not doing it.
It's just one show.
Okay. All right. Folks, let's Cynthia, that's it. We say we were closing the list. We're going next item, please, which is 13B, news coverage protocols and policies. Andrea.
Mr. Chair, this particular item has also been on for some months, not as long as the previous one, but it was motivated by some people were asking me questions about KPFA that I couldn't answer. And they said, well, there's a march marching by KPFA. There's a big, giant, thousands of people marching by. And, you know, KPFA's news is progressing or their programming is continuing uninterrupted. That eventually changed, obviously. But it did raise the question of how do you know when to preempt? How do you know and so it's a question now. And if any of the staff can answer it, I would be very interested. It would help me to communicate with people who are speaking to me. How do you know when to preempt? And so what are the guidelines around that? And what are the protocols? Who makes that call? And is that broadly known within the station, to people in the station? If you happen to be in the station when a 5,000-person march is marching by your station, do you know who to call, or do you know what questions to ask? Or is that broadly known? The other question has to do with preempting other, what are the guidelines for special programs? And is it, I'm just a question, is it written down? Is it broadly communicated? Because some people will say, if it doesn't exist before the event, then people say that there's favoritism happening to particular issues. So I'm wondering if there are protocols, if they exist, if people think that would be useful to articulate that so that when people say, oh, well, people in KPFA only cover, only do special programming on events that they're involved in, or that they're picking and choosing. So that's my question. I would ask that to the staff if maybe you guys could enlighten me about what already exists in that on those issues.
Go ahead, Janet, and then we'll go to Brian.
Yeah, so I also would like to know how, well, many times there have been activities, things that are going on in the communities, in the city, whatever, police action or some kind of thing happening at the moment, and somebody is there, or there might be a demonstration, maybe spontaneous or whatever, and they want to contact KPFA to cover it. And so my understanding is the only way is to either email news@kpfa.org or call a number which somebody might or might not answer. And so that would be a missed opportunity. And so I think it would be good to have some way to be able to, for the public to be able to contact KPFA with something like that, that maybe should result in preempting. So I don't know, somebody who is a rotating or person who's there live who will answer the phone, or I don't know what, you know. I think you get my idea.
Okay, Brian, and then I'll put myself on the list too. Is anybody else on this discussion? Okay. David and Cynthia.
So I teased out three questions from this, kind of who has the authority to break in with breaking news? What does it take to get a special preemption on the air, like one that's planned in advance? And how can members of the public call in breaking news that they're witnessing? So my understanding is that either of the news co-directors, Eileen Alf and Daria Mark Merrickle, have the authority to break into a program that's on the air and say, we need to do a news bulletin. And that's like not like we're taking over your show. It's like I'm coming on for 2 minutes to tell people what we know and tell them we'll be back on as soon as we know more. So that's like, you know, if there's a natural disaster, a shooting spree, you know, massive police crackdown on a protest, something that is unexpected that the public needs to know about right away. For preemptions, there's a proposal form on the KPFA staff page, which is actually visible to the public. It's at kpfa.org/staff.
The new website.
Yeah, it's on the new website, too. And, you know, deciding to do preemptions, it's really a question you should put to Laura. The first question is obviously, is this something that is worth obliterating whatever other programming would, you know, is this going to be better or more interesting than what would otherwise be on the station? And then the second question is, what's the feasibility of doing the broadcast? Can we get a good signal from that location, a reliable signal to do it live? Do we have enough people who are willing to work on that broadcast to make it happen, who have the requisite skills? Okay. And then the third question, and...
I just wanted to clarify the question.
Third question is, like, how people call stuff in.
Not only call, but contact somehow.
Yeah. So the news email account, we're going through on a pretty constant basis. If you call the station, the second option you get on the voicemail tree is to go to the news department, which is pretty much the only part of the station where someone reliably picks up the phone. Not universally. If Eileen's the only one in the news department and she happens to be on the air when someone calls, they're not going to get a human answering. But with our new phone system, the voice message they leave will be recorded, transcribed, and emailed to her, so it'll be the first thing she sees when she sits back down at her computer. And our news department is not staffed at all hours. It's not staffed from 7 at night until 4:30 in the morning, except on the nights when we have trainings there. So there won't be someone picking up the phone then.
That's,
yeah.
A lot of things happen.
No, it's true. A lot of stuff happens. The question is, like, what do you want to do about it? Given the number of people we have on payroll, I think it's amazing that we are staffed, 15 hours out of the day. Would an overnight shift person be a good idea? In the abstract, sure. Is it better than where else we could spend that money? No.
Does it have to be a paid person?
Paid.
if, yeah, I mean, so you could have a conversation about kind of having volunteer people on news staff on the graveyard shift. I don't know how much interest there would be in that, particularly since there would be long stretches where there wasn't a lot of news to break in with. If we were in a situation again like we were with the war in Iraq, where people were riveted to KPFA and the main news breaking about that war was 9 hours ahead of us, then it might make sense to change our shift structure so there was someone overnight producing regular reports. And we changed our shift structure during Black Lives Matter. The reason we got more on it was Mitch Jeserich and I cut our producers loose and put them out in the field and said, go talk to people, get tape on what's happening, and just start piling up phone numbers of everybody who seems to know what's going on. Because it wasn't like protest movements before we were getting press releases. People were communicating very laterally. They were doing it over Twitter and social media. So we had to adapt the kind of staffing structure that we had to the realities of a new type of social movement. It took us a while to catch up to that. But we got better, I think. And with Occupy Wall Street 3 years prior, when all the crackdowns, the attempts to evict the encampment at Oscar Grant Plaza were happening at like 3:30 in the morning, we also changed. I was a reporter at the time. I basically switched my shift from business hours to the graveyard so that I could be out there recording the tear gas and the arrests and the stuff that was going on. But then that limited our capacity to go pin down the mayor when she gave a press conference at 3 o'clock the next afternoon about why they did it. Because they got to sleep at some point. So, you know, we do what we can. We can probably do better. But
okay. Thanks, Brian. And I let Brian go a little longer, of course, because he was answering many of the questions.
I have a point of information.
Okay. So I wanted to know who can preempt on the weekends. You know, so...
Yeah, it's the same people. It's
you said Eileen and Mark, but mm-hmm. Do they work on the weekends and during the week?
Eileen lives a 6-minute bike ride from the station, and has come on on the weekends to do breaking news updates. It's not in her job description, but she does it.
And preempt.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. Break. Like, it's not a preemption. Like, you know, suddenly your blues show is off the air. It's, hey, I need to get on for 3 minutes to let people know about this boat off the coast of Gaza that just got massacred. That actually happened on a holiday, but she came in to start doing news updates
Partway
through the day.
Thanks.
That
well.
So. I'll put you on a list. I got a list right here. Let me go over it. And for the sake of time, I like to close the list, which is, you know, as relatively soon as possible, so we can go to the final agenda item of old business. So I have myself, David, Cynthia, Janet, and Andrea again.
No,
you're good. Okay. I'll keep mine short because Brian answered a lot of the questions that I was going to ask. I'm someone who's also, as part of my work in the community, has had to go to the channels of trying to get coverage from KPFA on actions, you know, press events, right? So I appreciate that Brian kind of let us know what the protocols and kind of like the flow, how that's taken through the news at KPFA. And I will say that sometimes there's a lot of things that come across their desk, right? Just like it does for many other media outlets, and they have to kind of decide who's going to cover it, how, what their resources are that day. And I think those things need to be taken into account because I think there's this idea, I think, in a lot of like the progressive community and kind of activist community, KPFA should just be out there every single protest or march and so on. But you know, that may not be realistic, you know, in terms of like can the news department, you know, and can the station be covering that every single time, right? And if so, how, right? But I appreciate that at least we're having these discussions. And I'll just finish by saying that I do want to propose that both Quincy and Laura be engaged on this as well, because our names have kind of come up. I think more Laura let me know, but I think Quincy should as well. If not, you know, I'm not proposing they come here next month and have a Q&A with us on this, but I'd like to get a sense from them about what they think about us on the board having these discussions, right? Because we're funneling a lot of different ideas and requests and needs in the community through this conversation, and I'd like to get a sense from them what their take on is on a lot of this. That's the folks managing a lot of this work, right? Just to get something out of them, to get a feel of how they think about these things moving forward. And if they're not able to make it next month, at least, you know, I would ask if Quincy can at least put in his report, you know, what he thought about these items that we've been reading today, this afternoon. So next is David.
There's not much to add, really. I appreciate Brian explaining how things work. I just think we have, for the first time in many years, we have permanent and professional people in these management roles here at the station. And it's their job and their responsibility to manage these things, and we should let them do that.
Okay, and then I got Andrea, and did you want to answer something else?
I appreciate your that's helpful to hear.
I'm sorry,
your
Cynthia, I skipped you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When you go ahead and finish, and then we'll finish.
But I guess what I'm specifically trying to be able to answer people's questions and say, well, here you go ahead and do gavel-to-gavel hearings on some congressional appointment. So we'll get hours of hearings from Congress. Now here we have a climate change something happening. Should we cover it live? And what would be helpful to me is if I could say, the question of is it worth it is kind of what does worth it mean? Worth it to who, and what constitutes worth? And so that's the thing that's where we get slammed a little bit. And people say, oh, well, KPFA is drifting into national radio territory because all they care about are the Republicans and the Democrats, and that's the coverage, and it's drifting in that direction. And then somebody walks away feeling hurt because, you know, dang KPFA, they don't even want to cover this really cool demonstration that's going to happen, and what a bunch of liberals. And, you know, and I guess it would just be helpful if we just had an objective criteria. And it's not to say that we will know, and that it's not a subjective thing, because it is. But we could make it less subjective, and we could chart kind of, and at least be able to articulate to our listeners what that criteria is. I'm not even trying to say at this point what it should be. I'm just curious about what it is, you know, because it exists. Somebody's making those calls. Somebody's making deciding those things. And I would love to know what goes into it. So what I heard from Brian was that the question, is it feasible and is it worth it? And I guess what I'd like to do is continue the conversation a bit with our general manager and maybe understand, and I can write to him, and maybe we could continue this conversation at the next meeting and understand it a little better so that our listeners understand.
Cynthia.
Briefly. I would say that in the last two local things we've done, the one, Andrea, that I was with you on Thursday, and another local thing the previous week, were both covered well in the morning news by Eileen. And I was, happy. And that's somewhat typical, you know, in a sense, that they will, I think they're doing the best they can. And I think up front, I haven't sent anything, but I get the feeling from the program that you're very open to hearing from the community up front. Of course, I still wish we had a 8 a.m. program like that, but I want to say over the years when we used to send press releases, not Eileen or Mark, but somebody who's one of the regular volunteer people on 6 to 7, just said, local news, just don't bother Monday through Friday. Whereas, that is maybe exactly true. Maybe we need to send the press releases ahead of time. On the other hand, the weekend news, which is a half an hour, including some of the same people, pretty accessible. I mean, pretty accessible in getting your local things covered as well. So I appreciate you answered some of my questions, and I think it would be great to continue this conversation. I guess that's all.
Thank you, Cynthia. So next on the agenda, LSB subcommittees. Yes. Sorry, I thought there was no more hands, but go ahead.
Just to Andrea's question, I mean, I think you can't avoid the fact that a lot of calls of preemptions kind of come down to a judgment call. And it comes down to a question of whether or not you like the judgment of the person making that call. Like, for instance, there was, you know, a lot of folks wanted to broadcast live from this huge fracking demonstration in downtown Oakland. I was one of them. I thought it would have been a good idea to try to broadcast a portion of it. I was not in a position to volunteer to put time into it that weekend because I was had other plans. And I certainly did not know it was going to be as big as it turned out to be. I thought even as a smaller action, it was worth covering. There were also major logistical hurdles. Because the phone companies are moving away from providing wired service, it's impossible, virtually impossible for us to get a hard line dropped to a place that we want to broadcast from. So then we're stuck on the cellular network's data connections. And as soon as you're in the middle of a big crowd and everybody's phone is hitting the same tower, you start dropping the connection. So the actual logistics of doing live broadcasts from outdoors in crowds technically have gotten much harder. Add to that a march on the move. So you can go test the connection in Oscar Grant Plaza, and then the thing starts moving up Broadway, you're marching through dead zones, and you've got dead air. If you don't have total clarity on what the program or the schedule is going to be ahead of time, it's really hard to plan around it at KPFA. You wind up putting yourself in a situation where you've got to plan two broadcasts. Here's what we think we'll be broadcasting live, and here's plan B if we lose the feed or if they come out on stage an hour late because they can't get the generator started at Fruitvale. So it takes an immense amount of people. It takes an engineer who's good enough not just to run a live broadcast but to troubleshoot if it's not as anticipated out in the field. It takes another engineer at KPFA to troubleshoot from that end. It takes a host to be on the mic, kind of filling air between speakers out in the field, and a producer who's running and getting them guests. But it also takes a backup host to anchor what's going to be coming out of the station under the plan B, and possibly a backup producer. So you start, I mean, it's a big production. And a worthwhile production. Gavel-to-gavel coverage, by contrast, is easy. We pay $70 for a studio-quality connection to Capitol Hill. That infrastructure is already in place. It's like cutting a check and hitting a button, and then someone parks in our studio, lines up some guests, and watches the thing on C-SPAN. So, you know, part of it's like kind of following a path of lesser resistance. And then, sorry, the second thing I wanted to say was in regard to what you said, Cynthia. So just kind of so you know, on the weekdays, we now have a statewide broadcast. The 6 to 7 hour is on KPFA, KPFK, and KZSC in Santa Cruz. But we've formatted it so that for 15 minutes from 6:30 to 6:45, each of those stations is only broadcasting to its own local area. So we kind of break apart and come back together. So there's room for local coverage. The question is about resources and what other stories are competing. So during the week, we have a lot of news out of the Middle East, out of Washington, out of the state capital, out of city councils. On the weekend, this is when most demonstrations that are trying to draw working class people are planned for. And there is precious little else. There's nothing happening in the courts, in the government, etc. Our weekend staff is often struggling to find up enough to fill a half-hour newscast and grateful when there are community actions planned, whereas during the week, we're budgeting minutes and seconds to cover competing things of interest and stretch thin to have enough people to put on them so that we can do more than just read copy off the wire. So.
All right, Margie, and then I'm going to close and move to the next agenda item. Mic for you over there.
I just want to speak up for gavel-to-gavel coverage. I love it, and I don't remember the last time I got to hear gavel-to-gavel coverage on KPFA. Someone will remind me. But I was riveted during the Iran-Contra hearings.
I wish I could have heard the entire hearing, which took place recently, where Elizabeth Warren gave the bankers hell. You know, it's not a bad thing, and I think making that available to our listening. During the Iran-Contra thing, I listened to the hearings twice. I listened to them live, and then I listened to them repeated at night because it was such great drama. I don't think we should. I don't want us to close the door on that kind of coverage. If it's a big national issue and there's something exciting happening.
All right. Thank you, Margie. Next on the agenda, LSB subcommittees, Janet.
Yeah, so we talked about a little bit about this at the last meeting, and we're kind of like not many of us left here. So I have a motion that I would like to also move at the next meeting, similar to what happened with the previous motion. But I'd like to read it and just give a little motivation. So I move that the LSB form an ad hoc subcommittee of three or more LSB members to explore the need for subcommittees of the KPFA LSB and come up with a proposal for next steps at the July LSB meeting. And I have it here. And I will email it. And I mean, so right now my understanding is, and as far as subcommittees, they're not called subcommittees, the outreach committee, there isn't really a KPFA LSB outreach committee, from what I understand, where people are. How does somebody is it an official committee, subcommittee? I mean, is it belong to the LSB, or is it beyond the LSB? I'm not clear about that, but regardless, maybe formalize that. But there are other duties and responsibilities that the board has that probably would be good to have subcommittees for. For example, management evaluation. So the LSB is required to do an annual evaluation of the general manager and the program director. So maybe a management evaluation committee. And I also would recommend that we do invite Laura Privitz to come to the LSB, because we are supposed to evaluate the program director as a guest. I mean, she could come every meeting, but I think we should start thinking about that. A finance subcommittee, a development subcommittee. Anyway, so another thing is that the PNB last year, well, there have been times when for a PNB meeting agenda, you have committee reports, and there are PNB committees, and last year a lot of the committees did work, but then it never got to the agenda of the PNB, and so it's like, why even bother? But that's probably going to change. It started to change, and so if committees do work, that work can be brought to the PNB, and then the PNB acts on whatever the committees have decided, motions or whatever they would consider motions, and that's how it's been. You know, that would be the way it would work. And so we can do the same thing at this LSB if we have subcommittees. Anyway, just an idea. And in any case, I'm noticing this motion for the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Janet. Margie, I'll put myself on the list. Go ahead.
Okay. I appreciate Janet's bringing this subject forward. I want us to talk about it in the context that I believe that being part of the governance structure of both the local station and the national board is way too cumbersome and demands way too much time. The PMB committees, but the bylaws ask that each LSB assign two members to each of the PMB committees. Okay, so I don't know, there's like five or six committees, so that's already 12 people out of this body. And then we're going to have subcommittees of the LSB, and it's like, I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Believe me, I'm really know this. You could spend every single evening of your life doing something for Pacifica if you were on a committee, chair of the board, the IED. I'm just telling you. It's too much, and we have to. So here's what I think. I think that we should have committees with a specific purpose. I think it's a good idea to set up a committee to work on an evaluation process, to do the evaluations of the PD and the GM. I think that's a good idea. That committee has a finite purpose. It has a life, you know, just like we had a hiring committee. There's a beginning and an end. It has a task. It completes that task, and then you're done. If we want to talk about development, I don't think we want an ongoing committee. We want a committee that comes up with a plan for raising money and for the board's participation in raising money. And then that's it. That's their task, and then it's done. This business of committees that have a life that just goes on and on and on, I think is one of the things that's wrong with Pacifica, because it means that people for whom Pacifica is not their life have a very hard time participating in the organization. It really shouldn't be your life, let me tell you that. you should be able to have a life outside of it. And those are the people we want. We want people on this board who are community activists, who have roots in the community, who are doing things. Those are the kind of people that we want to be able to attract.
Okay, now I put myself on. I like your idea, Janet, of creating this group of 3 to 4 members to explore kind of if we create subcommittees, what would they be, right? And I think bringing it back next month makes sense. You said, yeah, bringing back the motion next month so that group or quote committee or subcommittee would bring back something to us by July, right? And I think that's a reasonable timeline. Yeah, because I do remember when I first got on the LSB a couple years ago, there were a bunch of subcommittees, and then it just kind of felt like we lost track who was doing what, or if they were active, or when they were meeting, right? And those are challenges met in any organization that creates committees and subcommittees. But I do always have this feeling and a sense from folks connected to KPFA from every angle that there is a need for things to be addressed, you know, or looked into that would be the work of subcommittees, right? What exactly those are, which ones would be reasonable, which ones are actually going to be volunteered, you know, by folks. That's, I think, something that could be a task of this group. And that's why I think this is, you know, I like this idea. And maybe you'll come back, you know, or this group will come back with a proposal for like 2 subcommittees, right? Or who knows, maybe they'll come back and say, there are 6 major things, but realistically, we can know there's only enough volunteers or interest for 2, right? At least we need to know that, right? I think it's not a huge effort that takes away from other things in the next few months that could at least give us an idea of what we should follow up on and put some effort into, you know, if there's some serious things that need to be followed up on. So I think in the concept, I'm totally in favor of it. So anybody else on this discussion? Yeah, so it'll be any objection on this to bringing it back next month for a vote? Okay. All right. Thank you, Janet. So there is a final piece on the agenda, the bylaw amendments proposed. We did it already.
All we did was pass them out.
Oh, okay. Oh, perfect.
On May 9th.
Thanks. Can you do me a favor? Because that didn't go on here. Can you say that again?
Oh, I think it did maybe before you. But the PNB is voting on two bylaw amendments on May 7th. And then the bylaws say once they vote, anything that they pass, the LSBs must consider and vote on. And so if they pass one or both of them, we will have a discussion then on May 9th and a vote whether we pass them. That has to be done on May 9th. And, well, that's why you're given a copy to read now and think about it. And then if three of the station's LSBs agree, then the bylaw is changed. That's in the works. That's the way it works. It doesn't have to, some things might. Most things, changing bylaws are, these are just by the LSBs voting.
Thank you. I have a couple hands. Janet and then Margie.
Right. I mean, there are, there is a way that the membership, 2% of the membership of all the stations can propose bylaws, but that has not happened this time or ever, maybe, in any case. But I urge people to listen online on May 7th, starting at 5:30. That's when the PNB will be discussing these bylaws amendments, and you'll hear different arguments for, against, or whatever. So that'll give you more of an idea or some idea of some of the issues.
Excellent. May 2nd, you said?
7. May 7th. It's a Thursday.
Okay. Thank you. Any final thoughts, Margie, on this?
I want to move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, let's go home.